This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Wednesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. The Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. What's going on with the mortgage crunch? You have a lot of people trying to take advantage of those low rates. At some point, most investors will likely have heard of a stock that's gone on a huge run or a class of investment that's making people rich. They want to get on the bandwagon. It can lead to the fear of missing out. That is a dangerous emotion for investors. We welcome Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com, based in Washington, D.C. Mark, in general, emotion in investing is a bad thing, isn't it?
Well, that's right. The reason is that we are told over and over again that we probably ought to do just the opposite. So when everyone else is being fearful, that's the time to be greedy. But when everyone else is being greedy, that's the time to be fearful. And unfortunately, I think we're seeing a lot of evidence that it's the latter. And psychologists and behavioral economists in general have said over and over again that it turns out the hardest thing for investors is not losing money, believe it or not. As long as everyone else is losing money, too, they can take it. The hardest thing for individuals to take in the market is for them not to be making as much money as their neighbors. If their neighbors are getting rich and they're not, that is almost intolerable psychologically. And that really is what leads to that sort of that cycle of greed where it just it bids prices up further and further and further until it just can't go any further and then prices crash.
And if you're someone who's talking about your investments, you certainly don't want to hear everyone talking about their winners when all you have to talk about is losers.
Well, that's right. And that really that psychological pressure, that peer pressure to participate is just overwhelming. And indeed, you see it all the time. I mean, Bitcoin, for example, is one that's very much in the news. Everyone loves to talk about it. It's up an incredible amount. It's in fact, it's doubled from I think from about the 20th of December up until last week. It had doubled from 20,000 of Bitcoin to over 40,000. Or you can take an example like Tesla, which is an even more spectacular example. It's up, I think, over 700% over the last 12 months. And so a lot of that, I think, I don't think anyone would disagree, a lot of that increase is caused by people having that fear of missing out. So they're just, jumping on the bandwagon, which only makes more exaggerated any of the price runs, and it causes volatility. It means that there'll be higher highs, but then when things fall, it'll go to a lower low.
Yeah, talk about that a little bit more, the impact of that emotionalism on stock prices for everyone else.
Well, that's right. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, after all. So as more and more people buy it, it goes up. So then that causes more people to buy because, well, yes, the price keeps going up. And it always ends up going up further and faster than people thought, which, of course, draws more people in. So it leads to this crescendo, and then all of a sudden it crashes. And we saw this, of course, in the internet bubble. I mean, there were stocks that were going up that went way beyond what anyone could possibly have imagined at the time. And it finally drew in almost everybody. People who were famous for saying it was a bubble in 1998, 1999, finally were drew in saying, well, maybe this time is different. They always say those are the four most dangerous words on Wall Street. They claim finally, yes, this time is different. And that was ironically enough, right near the top, and things crashed. And I think we'll see something like that today. Unfortunately, we can't say when it will be. Trying to predict when a bubble will break is an impossible game. But nonetheless, some of the values we're seeing on Wall Street are just unsustainable.
Thanks so much, Mark Hulbert. He is investment columnist for The Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com. Just ahead, major automakers deal with the shortage of a critical manufacturing component. And later on, 12:39, Personal Finance Wednesday, rebalancing your portfolio and all your finances as you head into 2021. Ford, Fiat, Chrysler, Nissan, and Volkswagen are among major automakers suffering from a global shortage of semiconductor chips. Let's talk about the impact. Jeff Gilbert is here, CBS auto reporter based in Detroit. Jeff, kind of give us a thumbnail sketch of the problem.
The problem is that car companies got up and running faster than the chip producers did. And, it's a supply and demand issue. And these microchips are ubiquitous. One analyst said it's sort of like the digital equivalent of screws. They're used everywhere. So the car industry is competing against the appliance industry and the tech industry, and there just aren't enough chips to go around.
And that would impact prices, right? I mean, supply and demand?
Supply and demand, but it also impacts production. So when car makers don't have enough chips to put in their vehicles, they prioritize the vehicles that they're going to build. Fiat Chrysler, for example, shutting down temporarily a plant in Canada that makes mid-sized cars and a plant in Mexico that makes a variety of slower-selling products so they can get the chips to their more important products like the big Ram pickups and the Jeep Wrangler and vehicles like that that they sell at big profits. And you're seeing all car makers do this in one way or another.
Now, is this the sort of thing that eventually gets back to normal, you know, where you have the chips you need and you move forward? Or are you just constantly always behind unless the chip makers can somehow ramp up production?
Well, everything gets back to normal eventually, but how long this is going to take is really anybody's guess. And the car companies, you may recall, have a lot of experience in dealing with these big supply chain disruptions, not just COVID, but the earthquake in Japan a couple of years ago impacted chip production in particular. There were floods in Thailand. So, you know, it's a dancing act. They've been doing it ever since the plants resumed production after the COVID shutdown. This is just one more issue that they're dealing with, and it's probably one of the bigger ones.
And something, I guess, for people to understand, and maybe they've gotten it more these days, but just how much of your automobile is actually computer and computer run?
Technically speaking, cars are computers on wheels, and I can't tell you how many chips are in a vehicle, but there are a number of them, and just like the analogy with screws, it may be an interchangeable part, but you can't make a car without them. I mean, if you want to drive a car that doesn't have a computer chip, you probably have to go back many years and get yourself a classic 57 Bel Air or something like that.
And in general, it's good. You have more efficiencies, more capabilities. But when you have a chip shortage, that's when it becomes a problem.
Exactly. And again, I don't want to underestimate it because it's going to cause a significant disruption to production, but I don't want to overestimate it either. Car companies are dealing with these kinds of situations all the time. And what we're going to see as consumers is, maybe slightly tighter inventories. Inventories have been tight this year to begin with, but car dealers are very resilient people. So if there's a particular vehicle you want, they're going to be able to find it for you. But if you're too specific, you may have to wait a while.
Thanks so much, Jeff Gilbert, CBS auto reporter. Just ahead, new strains of COVID-19 are showing up in the U.S.
Download the WBBM Noon Business Hour podcast, or if you missed only a portion, rewind on the radio.com app.
Researchers in Ohio have identified two new strains of COVID-19. They believe they originated here in the U.S. Joining us on the ComEd Energy Efficiency Business Line, Michelle Cortez, health reporter at Bloomberg News. Michelle, tell us what you know about these strains.
So on the heels of hearing more about the strains that are coming out of the UK and South Africa, we're hearing about some changes that are happening in the United States. And Cisco, you have to remember that this isn't unexpected. The virus, every time it replicates inside your body or as it goes from one person to the other, it has the potential to mutate. And that's what they're seeing now in Columbus. Just like with those earlier strains, they're suggesting that it doesn't seem to make the virus itself more deadly. It's just easier to transmit, which, of course, with easier to transmit means more cases, more hospitalizations, and more deaths. So it's definitely not good news. But the idea that we're seeing more novel cases of coronavirus in the U.S. it is happening and it's to be expected.
And that's why when we hear the numbers of vaccinations that have been given out, you know, you'll hear 10,000 here, 15,000 there. In the grand scope of things, we need a lot more people to be vaccinated.
Exactly. We're going to need close to, you know, all the country having either been infected or vaccinated at some point. The lower figures are 60 to 70% of Americans. And of course, that's hundreds of millions of people. We're talking about 10 million doses so far have actually made it into someone's arms at this point. So we're not anywhere near where we need to be. The more people that are vaccinated, the less willing hosts for the virus, the less replication, the less chance of any of these variants cropping up, especially the more deadly ones. So absolutely, you're right. We need to get vaccination rolling.
Now, is there a chance? I mean, I guess I hate to ask it that way because there's always a chance, but you have these new strains and there may likely be other new strains. Is there a chance we get to the point where there is a mutation of the coronavirus vaccine out there that these vaccines don't do anything for?
Yeah, absolutely. Every time you see the mutation happening, it's like opening a door into an entirely new room. So the mutation can happen and then you have a new setting and there can be another mutation that occurs that would make it be able to evade the impact of the vaccination. And so that's what everyone is, of course, worried about. Not only that, we're hearing already that the FDA is looking into testing to make sure that the tests we have out there are accurately detecting these variants. So the risk, of course, would be that you get back a negative result suggesting that you're not infected when, in fact, you're infected, just not with a variant that the test picks up. So both of those things are concerns. At this point, we don't believe that either one of those are possible, but it's something that experts are watching closely.
Thanks as always for the info. Michelle Cortez, health reporter at Bloomberg News. Just ahead, Personal Finance Wednesday, adjusting your portfolio to the change at the top of the federal government.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. The House is set to impeach President Trump for a second time today. A special report from CBS News is next. In Personal Finance Wednesday, updating your investment portfolio as the new president takes over in Washington. The demand for mortgage refinances on the rise with rates at record lows. WBBM Business, the Dow is up 59 points. The NASDAQ is up 80 and the S&P is up 13 points. Oil is down a little less than a half a percent. We have sunshine in Chicagoland headed up into the mid-40s. Right now, 40 degrees at O'Hare, 41 degrees at Midway, and 41 along the lakefront at 1231.
CBS News Special Report. The House has begun debating the impeachment of President Trump ahead of a final vote this afternoon. If it passes, Mr. Trump will be the first president in American history to be impeached twice. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
They were domestic terrorists, and justice must prevail. But they did not appear out of a vacuum. They were sent here by the president with words such as a cry to fight like hell.
It comes a week after a violent mob of Trump supporters attacked the Capitol. Republican Congressman Tom Cole not on board.
Rather than looking ahead to a new administration, the majority is again seeking to settle scores against the old one. Rather than seeking to heal America, they're seeking to divide us more deeply.
CBS News Director of Surveys Jen DePinto with a new CBS News poll.
A 55% majority of Americans think President Trump should be impeached now. This is favored largely by Democrats and independents.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Matt Piper.
Another story developing at this hour. Illinois Democrats have chosen State Representative Chris Welch as the new Illinois House Speaker. Welch's elevation to the post ends Michael Madigan's decades-long reign and control of both the Democratic Party and state agendas. It's 1232.
Discussing the news affecting your money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. Market's a little sluggish. The Dow up just 60, the NASDAQ up 78, and the S&P is up 12 points. Let's see what's going on. Michael Palumbo is here, founder of MJP Capital, author of the book Calculated Risk. Mike, what do you make of what you're seeing on Wall Street today?
Well, good afternoon, Cisco, and thanks for having me on. You know, we have a slow day today, a little bit of a churn up in the S&P. But we're basically at all-time highs, and it doesn't look like any reason to be that fearful, other than the fact that everybody I know is long. things are you know, we had a CPI report that came out today. I've been very vocal about worried about being worried about inflation here in 2021. but it was very tame, showed 0.1% increase in December. So bond rates have come back down, and there's nothing right now that shows that this rally can't continue.
And as far as, I mean, you mentioned that markets are at their highs, yet people aren't fearful. Are they maybe a little concerned about whether or not things are going to continue going higher, at least in the short term? Is that why they're not maybe throwing more in right now?
Well, everybody I know is long. I mean, I get people coming up to me, showing me their Robinhood accounts. It's not a 2000 year 2000 level of fear of missing out, but we definitely see some of that. But I'm a little bit cautious, but I do believe that the numbers do bear out this rally, and that if rates stay low, we can go higher, and that's the key. And I was worried we ticked up to 1.2% in the 10-year a few days ago, and now we've pulled back to 1.1 again. And as long as there's just a small increase in rates and it's measured, we can go higher in stocks. I just am concerned that there's going to be an inflationary shock, and if that happens, you'll see a pullback in stocks. But if not, we seem to be okay.
Are you expecting slow growth, again, at least in the near term? It doesn't seem like there's something out there that could be that catalyst to more significant growth.
No, I think measured growth will be in the future. And you'll see the most increase in valuation still in tech stocks, because they have the growth. There's where the growth is, and that's where you're going to see continued improvement in valuations. But last year was an unbelievable year for tech, but I think this year can also be, as long again as rates remain low. So we'll have to watch that. We'll have to watch the 10-year, but if it continues to remain calm, then I think that it's still a green light for growth stocks especially.
Let's talk about some of the sexy stocks like Tesla. You have these, they've been just driven up so high. Is that sustainable? Is that warranted? Or are you silly to bet against those stocks?
Here's the thing. Tesla, I have no position. And the reason why I have no position is because I cannot confirm or deny this valuation. And there are times when you can step away and say, I don't understand. And just don't take a position. You don't have to trade every name, but you bring up Tesla, and I'll just say that Tesla's valuation, I look at it as, okay, its total valuation is equal to the top 10 car makers in the world. Is that correct? In my opinion, it probably is not, but I'm not willing to bet against it. I'm just going to stay to the sidelines. There are some people that believe Tesla's going to go, going to double from here, and they believe in Elon Musk. And betting against Elon Musk has proven to be a very bad bet so far. But I would just say, in names that you don't completely understand the valuation, just stay away. And that's what I do in names like Tesla.
Yeah, and stay away. And also, maybe if you play around with it, do it just that way. Play around with it, dabble in it, but don't necessarily stick a big chunk of your portfolio there.
Yeah, I see some people, and believe me, I have friends and family that show me their Robinhood accounts all the time, and they'll have 30% of their portfolio in Tesla. And I mean, I'm like, are you kidding me? I mean, that is not risk management, folks. It may have paid off. It has paid off in the last few years, but it's not the right way to do things. So, I stick to the book. I don't trade names I don't understand. And I try to make sure I know what I don't know. And I think those are things that keep you from going broke. And that's important. Now, recently, you've gotten paid off for being risky, but I don't think that will always be the case. And I know that it won't be the case, because it never is. It never holds that way. So I would just caution folks that have a lot of their investments in highly volatile tech names to diversify, please. And do not lever up in this environment, because we could have an easily drawdown of 10 or 20% in the stock market by just having rates tick up a little bit. So just be careful, folks.
Thanks so much, Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital. Up next, Personal Finance Wednesday, adjusting your investments to reflect a new administration in Washington.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday toward planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday on the Noon Business Hour, sponsored by Mesereau Wealth Management. There are financial implications to the political change in Washington. Joining us on the ComEd Energy Efficiency Business Line, Mark Horner, Wealth Advisor at Fairhaven Wealth Management. You can find them online at fairhavenwealth.com. Mark, help us to understand what we're thinking here. 2021, you have a new administration coming in, new policies, new rules. What should people be thinking?
Yeah, Cisco. So I think it's easy to think about the administration as having very specific impacts. And while there might be some ideas, like I think the notion that we're in for higher taxes in some form or another, I think is a reasonably safe bet. The stock market in general seems to look through whatever administration is in place, and so I'd be less inclined to be focused too heavily on what the administration may or may not do, and look instead maybe for opportunities that the market is presenting. And so one way to look at that is to look at various asset classes that maybe have underperformed others, and make sure that you've got enough exposure in your portfolio, not to those high flyers that have been doing well, but maybe underperformers.
And so give us an idea. So especially for the novice investor who maybe doesn't play around with it a lot, what sort of philosophy are they thinking about here?
Yeah, so at a very high level, a couple of ideas to think about is, what's your allocation in your portfolio for U.S. or domestic companies, and what's your allocation for international companies? The U.S. has outperformed international for quite a long time, going on 10 years. And so does that mean that there might be an opportunity to revisit how much exposure you've got to international investments versus U.S.? And then another high-level way to look at it is the size of companies. So there again, large cap, so the names that people that we're all familiar with, have really been the drivers of investment performance more recently. When if you look at longer periods of time, smaller and mid-sized companies typically have outperformed larger companies. And so there again, do I have enough exposure in my portfolio to the smaller and mid-sized companies, and not just the mega names that we're all familiar with?
And is this the sort of thing that people should do on a regular basis anyway, not just when there's a change in administrations?
So absolutely. The data, I'd say, is inconclusive about whether it's every 3 months, 6 months, or a year. But sure, as the beginning of a new year, this is a wonderful routine to get yourself into to make sure that you haven't loaded up the boat, either intentionally by making investment decisions, or the market through performance has overweighted your portfolio in particular asset classes.
And let's talk about, you have Joe Biden coming in, you have infrastructure. He's talked about that. It's been talked about for a long time. Now it may actually happen. Can people take advantage of that in their portfolios?
Yeah, right. So that has been a topic for quite a long time. We're generally not big fans of making very specific investment allocations within the portfolio. And so I would characterize infrastructure as being very specific. There might be room maybe in the fund portion of the portfolio to do something like that. But instead, we encourage clients to think more broadly. And that goes into the philosophy that we have just on financial planning, that we try and encourage clients to think about the risk that they need to take in order to hit their goals, and avoid risk that they don't need to take. So I would think about sector specific investments as fund money. If you're going to do that, it should be a very small portion of your overall portfolio.
I thought the whole point was to have fun here. Are you teaching me a new thing? Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I think prudent financial planning and investment management shouldn't be fun. It should be boring. Again, that doesn't mean that you can't carve off a little bit of the portfolio to take some flyers, but I would say if investing is where you're deriving the majority of this of your entertainment, you've got to really rethink that investing should be boring.
Yeah, for sure. You're right. Yeah, Mark Horner, wealth advisor at Fairhaven Wealth Management. That's Personal Finance Wednesday. This time tomorrow, Technology Thursday. Still to come today, an update on the mortgage market.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Mortgage rates remain low, spurring a spike in refinances. Let's talk about it with Steve Kirch, real estate editor at Market Watch here in Chicago. Steve, kind of give us the nuts and bolts of what's going on here. A lot of people refiing.
Mortgage Bankers Association said today that their applications for mortgage refinances were up 20% in the last week alone, and that they're seeing quite a few people trying to get into this market now as they think or maybe fear that mortgage rates have bottomed out and may be headed higher in the not too distant future. So we have kind of a FOMO thing happening. Folks want to take advantage of these low rates while they can.
It's really interesting because it seems like exactly the opposite has been going on. It was FOMO the other direction. People didn't want to refi and then found out that rates went even lower.
Right. As rates fell throughout most of 2020, I think you had a lot of people who would rather stay on the sidelines. Obviously, we have a lot of intervening issues as well in terms of folks and their household spending. But we get into the new year, I think people are looking to lock in savings if they can. A lot of the forecasts from mortgage folks are saying that rates are likely to rise in the second half of this year. And so if you want to get this taken care of, you may need to do it in the next couple of months.
When you have a big rush of people like this, all looking to refi, do you ever get into any challenges? I mean, is the pool of capital only so big? Are there delays, that sort of thing?
We have seen that in the past. This time around, so far, things are smooth, and it obviously depends on the borrowers themselves, if they have the credit scores, if they're in the financial position they need to be to refinance. It can go smoothly. You have to watch out for the fees and whether you can afford those. You have to watch out for extending your balance out too far if you're early in your loan, you're paying a lot of interest. So there are factors you have to watch for. But the mortgage companies, at least so far, are not reporting any issues with these refinances.
In general, what are we talking about for rates these days?
So the mortgage banker said the average commitment rate in this weekly survey was 2.88% for a 30-year conforming loan. Those are loans that can be bought by the big companies, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. I think their limit's about $510,000 on the loans these days. That was up just slightly from the week before, and we've seen rates rise again a little bit this week, but still under 3%. And most folks think even if they do rise, they're not likely to go more than a quarter point or so above 3% by the end of this year.
Yeah, historic times for sure. Thank you, Steve Kirch, real estate editor at Market Watch here in Chicago.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.